This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Were you watching the Monday night game all the way, like, past the gun handshakes? All that stuff.
I watched a little bit. Yeah, I saw Allen and DeMar Hamlin interviewed on the field on ESPN.
Before that, did you see Mac Jones?
I saw him. I saw him on the field.
I saw him play.
I did not notice anything after the game was over.
So it's the usual thing, you know, players, especially the ones that know each other. Morse, probably, you know. Hugs, good game,
yeah.
Usual thing.
Morse, I was mad. Allen, at one point, you could see Allen approaching Morse, and they cut away. And I was like, I really want to see that. Anyway.
Well, the camera, which was on Allen like pretty much the whole night, even after he left the game, the camera in that whole situation was on Allen when Mac Jones was nearby, and Allen was looking away, either because or on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking away, and Mac Jones called to him.
Oh, really?
Yes. Like, Josh. And Allen turned, and it was a very quick, you know, hug.
Yeah.
And then he walked away.
Right.
So, I don't know. Take that for what it's worth. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Sal, you're probably doing your own interview during all of that, usually, I'm thinking.
Yeah, sometimes I'm right around. Actually, I happened to be pretty close to Josh when he was about to go on ESPN. I was interviewing Dalton Kincaid. So just a little behind the scenes, you know, maybe people are a lot of times interested in how our jobs work sometimes. So as the game is unfolding towards the end, you know, I'll start to think in my mind who I'd like to interview post game right after the game. And it's never if the Bills lose, it's just if the Bills win, obviously. So when the game's in hand and, you know, there's 3-4 minutes left, I'll start formulating that and I'll ask Bills PR, you know, who will CBS be getting or who will ESPN be getting in this case? Because whoever they get, generally, I'm not going to get. That's the difference between basically billions and millions, right? I mean, like,
right.
So they're going to get who they get. But I will tell you, against the Miami Dolphins, I really wanted Jamarcus Ingram. And Bill's PR said, you know, he's actually going to go do an interview with Amazon and with Kaylee. And I said, well, but they said, you know, if you want to stick around, if you have time. So it was really nice of Greg Harvey and Chris and Eric to actually be stretching and waited out for me to do that. So that was pretty cool. So everything was good. Everything was pretty cool that night to be able to get that. And then to get Dalton Kincaid, obviously, on the field after the last game.
So I saw from your Twitter, I guess, yesterday or last night, you looked up some of the metrics from this game and found that it's one of the most efficient Bills games in many years, at least, offensively and defensively, in terms of yards per play.
Yeah, for sure. The game on Monday night was only one of four times in the history of Buffalo Bills football since the merger where the Bills averaged, I think it was 6.4 yards per play or more, mm-hmm. and they gave up 3.5 yards per play or less. That is just total and complete domination. And if you think about it, really towards the end of the game, they were kind of, they'd backups in, obviously, and they were giving up yards for clock. So it could have been even worse. The last time it happened was 21 years ago in 2003. So that's a pretty wide gap to have between yards per play for and yards per play against.
I would not have guessed these games. I mean, there are certain games that are famous for offensive efficiency. Like there's a game in Seattle with Doug Flutie that might be their all-timer for yards or first downs. But the last time it was this efficient both sides of the ball, Sal gave you the numbers, was a game against Washington. It was a late game at home, as Sal said, 2003. Rob Johnson and Bruce Smith, I think, played for Washington.
Okay, yeah. This is one of our first post-game shows together.
From a bar.
We did it at a bar out on Southwestern Avenue. Yes.
That's right. That's
Steve Spurrier was the Washington coach.
Steve Spurrier.
Yeah. You know something I was thinking about? I'm sorry to spring this on you guys. I don't exactly want to be sounding like I'm assigning homework, but I had a thought this morning, and I'm not as adept on the reference sites and feeding the server there to get a result I'm looking for. But I wondered how many games in NFL history, certainly in Bills history, they've had three different running backs score touchdowns in. Because that happened on Monday night.
Not all rushing,
but just three different running backs who scored touchdowns. I didn't go look. The first thing I thought of was the Tim Tindale game. It's a playoff game, but still, like, he scored. I didn't look for the box, but I'm not going to go box by box.
I'll do this.
I was hoping you could feed that into your search bar on one of those reference sites and maybe get an answer.
It's not common, but I bet it's happened every 3 years or so,
yeah,
maybe something like that.
Right.
Okay. Well, it was a pretty good night, I would say, Sal. We haven't spoken since the Bills were 2-0 on that pregame show on Monday.
By the way, that would be what? Tim Tindale, Derek Holmes, and Thurman Thomas.
In 95. Guess, yeah. Right. That would be my guess. Again, I can easily look at the box for that game to find out if that is one such game, but it's the only Bills game that really sprang to mind for me.
I'll look it up. Sal, what's your sort of takeaway from it? Were the Bills just perfect here? Was Jacksonville maybe arguably more the story for how inept? I mean, these things are always a combination, but I guess it's hard for me to formulate the question, like, because what is there about that Bills performance that was not to like?
Look, I think it was the perfect scenario of a great matchup for the Bills for what the Jags did. We talked about it all week, a lot of man-to-man defense, and then they were losing players as well. Bills took advantage of that. You know, I mean, the Bills had the same thing happen to them in London last year against the Jags. They were dropping, and Jags took advantage of that a little bit. So it was the perfect matchup at the perfect time for a team that's feeling it at home on a Monday night, quarterback playing at an MVP level, and they run into a team that did not have the answers for what the Bills want to do. So I just think it kind of all came together there at once. That doesn't excuse 47-10 if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars. You can't let that happen. Shad Khan is really upset. I've read a lot of stuff about, you know, him being really upset after the game. I know earlier this offseason he said something like it's the most talented team they've had in quite a while or ever, or something like that. So I know there's expectations there. There's some heat on Doug Peterson now. So, you know, you come away with a story from that side, no doubt. They were not good. Give the Bills credit. They were very good. They're very dialed in on what they want to do right now, guys. This isn't just a three-week thing. This has been going back to March and April and roster construction and a really thoughtful plan for the roster and the game plan and how they want to play football, and even so much of understanding where the league is going, which we've talked about. And the Bills are prepared for this. And they not only mix – they have that, and then they mix it with pretty much the right matchup for them on that night.
Yeah, I was really encouraged, Sal. I know how I've sounded on these last two pregame shows for these night games where we don't do posts. We're here during the afternoon for weekday night games. And it's like they're going to be dragged kicking and screaming into having to throw the ball. And here was a game where the matchup dictated. You were in my head all day Monday thinking about this because, you know, matchup specific, you know, that we'll want to see what they think they need to do and will they do it. And here was a game where they didn't bother to force the run. They really didn't bother with it at all. They just like, we're going to be able to win here throwing the ball. And Allen was just so precise, Sal. He gets so much credit, you know, nationally and here locally, for the incredible plays he makes and the arm strength and the athleticism and leaping over dudes. Man, he was surgical. Like, the ball was just exactly where it needed to be on just about every ball he threw.
Josh Allen is so calm and in control of this offense right now. And not that he never has been, but I think at a different level than we've ever seen. And I do wonder if, you know, not having Stephon Diggs around, I'm not, you know, this is not a shot at Stephon Diggs. It's that aura and personality when you have someone that you kind of feel like it's got to be your guy. You're dropping back, you're looking for them because you're kind of, that's your guy, right? And now I think he has this freedom to just go anywhere with the ball that he wants, but he's so calm and collected. And here's the other thing about it. I think that, you know, it doesn't have to be necessarily reported because there's so much behind the scenes that goes on when they're working away from the facility. Josh Allen right now, guys, I will tell you, is really, really dialed in mechanically. Really dialed in. Like, he has worked on a lot of things. He's gone back in the lab. He's working with the 360 mapping that's been going on that we talked about, and we saw that during April and May during mini camps. Like, I think Josh Allen has had, you know, we talk about the second phase of the Bills. I think there's been a second phase of him. The leadership stuff that we talked a lot about in the offseason, well, so far so good there, right? We haven't seen anything that's necessarily been tested. Where is he, like, in someone's face? That's not necessarily what it is. But at every turn, it feels like everyone knows he's the leader, and he's acted and performed like the leader on and off the field. And I'm telling you right now, I just think he's so dialed in mechanically with what he needs to do and feeling very comfortable and calm about this offense and not having to force the issue.
I'm not going to say that I'm worried because of that, because that would be weird. You know, even Allen himself was willing to, in the postgame, say it's nice to, words to the effect of, it's nice to have, you know, guys that aren't interested in their stats, right? Like, you have to think he's thinking of Diggs, which would mean that he probably is, or they are thinking a lot about that, you know, and have certainly heard a lot about this, maybe more than any other topic. I would think Allen would have heard about this maybe more than anything else all summer, to whatever extent he's listening. So they were, if I can say they, I think a lot of fans certainly are excited to prove the point here after week three that they're better off without Diggs. I think you would say the same, though, that as impressive as it's been, it's still a little early for that.
100%. And two parts to this. Number one, what you just said about his quote on Monday night after the game. He addressed that a bit today. He was asked about it, and he kind of threw some water on that fire, and you know what you'd expect him to do, and say, look, I love 14, and it's not about him. It's just what we're doing, and it's about how we feel here. We're focused on ourselves. And he wanted to make sure that, you know, people aren't construing that comment like that, but of course that's going to happen. I mean, it's the first thing I think of when I hear him say that. Like, is he thinking in the back of his mind, so, you know, Stephon Diggs, someone's worried about stats, Gabe Davis, whoever it is, right? But Diggs would be the natural person. But he made sure today to throw love at Stephon Diggs and say that that's not the case. The second part about it is, though, I heard your conversation a little bit earlier, guys, and I agree that this is great. The question is, it doesn't have to be a worry. The question is how sustainable it is,
right?
Because as the season goes on, teams will get film. Teams will understand what they're trying to do a little bit more. You're going to run into some better teams in the postseason, of course, but even in the regular season, teams will have a little bit more of a handle and a plan. These defensive coordinators are good. They get paid a lot of money to figure these kinds of things out. And even this week, look, this week is not the same matchup. This is a zone-heavy team that doesn't blitz much. So the Bills are going to have to figure it out a little bit on offense. Now, I will say the Ravens have been leaky in the secondary. I put a stat out last night. The Bills' defense has given up the third fewest 20-plus yard pass plays this year, only four the entire year. The Ravens have given up the most. They've given up 16 20-plus yard pass plays. They're a little leaky in the secondary, but matchup-wise, they don't play a ton of man-to-man. They play some, and they don't blitz a ton, a little bit. And that's, I think, now Josh Allen not being able to find those one-on-one matchups, being patient, waiting for something to open. That's what you're going to find out a little bit more about this week.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I would anticipate anyway, as the week unfolds here, and, you know, it's a short week. It's already Wednesday, so we've only got really the rest of today and then Thursday and Friday to wring our hands about run defense. Like, I'm not sure how tested it's really been yet. The Bills have been in front by a lot in two of their three games here. I think we saw Arizona do some business early. Miami ran it effectively. They just had to leave it by the side of the road because the score got so crooked so quickly. Same with Jacksonville, although I don't know that they were effective at all. It's just simply we can't keep doing this. So Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, like that's a big test for the Bills without Taron Johnson and still, you know, without Milano, without Bernard.
For sure, no doubt about it. And they're going to run the ball. They're very good at it. Now, look, they just demolished the Cowboys in the run game last week, but it seems like everyone's been doing that going back to the Bills last year, even you know, when they had that game at home. So I'm sure the stats are a little bit more inflated, but they can run the ball. We know that. I saw a stat today that Derrick Henry, his yards before contact are very good. Now, you give him a little runway to run here, you know, then it makes even a difference in trying to tackle that man because he's so big and he's so fast and he's so strong. Then you throw in Lamar Jackson, and We know that Sean McDermott traditionally has done a nice job. There was a one game at home early in his career. Lamar did a really nice job against the Bills, but pretty outside of that, the playoff game, the game down in Baltimore, the Bills have had a good plan to kind of contain Lamar Jackson. So I think they'll have a good plan going in. Last week, I was very concerned about the linebackers in coverage for the Bills, and that was, you know, Spector and Dorian Williams. And honestly, like the Jags, they didn't have much there. I like the way those guys played, but the Jags just had to probably get out of their game plan anyway. So that was great that they couldn't, you know, kind of keep them. Yeah, they couldn't be two dimensional, I guess, right? They couldn't keep those guys on their heels. This is a game where I'm very confident in those guys against the run. They'll come up and they'll be physical. Bale and Spector will meet Derrick Henry in the hole. You know, he'll try and win those matchups. And Dorian Williams is going to meet Derrick Henry in the hole. What I'm a little worried about, though, is they're going to do a lot of stuff with Henry and with Lamar and pulling the ball out and running and that kind of contain. Now, I think about Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard and how they're how high IQ they are and how good they are at making sure that they're kind of in the right position. This is going to be a game where, to me, I'm confident in those guys going ahead and stopping the run, but they're going to probably play some games with them in the backfield to test them.
Sure, yeah. I mean, all it takes is really just to get a linebacker like that on the wrong side of a guard or a center, and there's your seam, right? So
that's right.
It doesn't take much. I mean, sometimes it can be glaring when you see a guy, you know, miss a read, overreact, and over-pursue or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, those guys are going to have to be on point, and, you know, they're both pretty green as far as playing time goes anyway. I know Spector's been around for a few years here, but there's just not a ton of experience there.
No, and one thing that's really helped the Bills, though, against the run so far, and it's, like you said, hasn't been, like, truly tested, they're really getting contributions from a physical secondary, too. Like, this is a secondary that's not afraid. Rasul Douglas isn't afraid to make a tackle and set the edge if he has to. And we've seen that happen. First week, he made a great tackle, and there's fourth down maybe, even maybe third down, whatever. Christian Benford can be a physical player. We know DeMar Hamlin's a physical safety. Taylor Rapp can be that way. So I think that, you know, that's really helped the Bills, too, against the run. Their secondary is not afraid to be physical. They're not afraid to come up and support the run when they have to. So it's going to be a really good matchup, obviously. I am monitoring the weather. I always do because I'm the sideline guy. And it looks like right now there's going to be a lot of rain in the area over the weekend. Not really sure exactly the timing of that rain, but, you know, you hope that doesn't also kind of play into not being able to run the ball that much on the Bills' side and, you know, the Ravens just kind of getting more into their game.
I know it's not every time, but whenever I think of Bills at Ravens, it's raining.
I know.
What is that crowd like?
Last two times.
Yeah, the opener in 18 was a rain fest, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, that was just
torrential. The
opener in 18
was tough, and then a couple of years ago, it just was a steady rain all afternoon when the Bills had that comeback and, you know, wound up winning on the last second field goal. Crowd's okay. I mean, the stadium's kind of one of these. I put it in the bucket with Pittsburgh and Cleveland, these stadiums that were built right around the same time where it's kind of not anything unique or special necessary. It's kind of a regular kind of stadium where, you know, the crowd noise isn't necessarily elevated like it is at some of these other stadiums, the way they're designed, like the Bills' new stadium will be. And, of course, we know, you know, in Highmark Stadium, just naturally like that. It's a good crowd. I don't think it's an overwhelming crowd necessarily, but, look, it's a Sunday night. They're going to be wearing their black uniforms. I believe I saw Mark Ingram's being honored. They're honoring some Olympians from the area that night. You know, they're going to put out all the stops. And
Ledecky.
They've asked fans to be in their seats by 8 p.m. for some show that's going on. So, you know, they're going to want to make it a raucous crowd.
I'm not sure she's going to be there, but she's Maryland, Katie Ledecky. Before I'm looking at the forecast now, too. It's like rain for 5 days. I don't know if that's the hurricane remnants.
Yeah,
but
I think so. Yeah. I was reading about Atlanta and the Mets playing in Atlanta this week, and there's some question about whether those games are going to be, and the whole playoff schedule could be in, you know, jumbled up because of that.
Sal, before you go, like the calculus on Taron Johnson, Terrell Bernard, and IR, so it's a guaranteed four-game miss with that. This will be Johnson's third game, and they've ruled him out, like, immediately for Sunday night. So we're getting close to the point where it might take an extra week, maybe. I know Sean McDermott was talking about this a little bit yesterday. You want to be pretty confident, I think, that the guy's ready for the fifth game after his injury if you didn't put him on IR. But I don't know, like, how penal is that? Maybe it's not as big a deal as I might think.
No, of course, the perfect scenario is if you knew he'd be out four games, you'd put him on IR so you can have the roster spot and you can sign someone. But guys, you know, in this era in the rules, you can elevate guys each week, so you get those two extra spots if you really need someone. And the big thing to remember here is the Bills have already used two of their designated to return spots on Matt Milano and Darrington Evans. Those had to be declared before the season started. If they were to put Taron Johnson on IR at any point, like a few weeks ago, or Bernard last week, and then they come back, you're using up two more. You only get eight. They only have six left. So you kind of got to be a little bit careful here and diligent and know, you know, so it's the ideal scenario that you save the roster spot if you know it's four games. But if it doesn't kill your roster and the 53-man roster, you don't have to do it. You just make him inactive, just like you would anybody else, basically, who's not going to play.
Right. Report. Joe Biscaglia reports a crack, Johnson told him, a crack in his forearm. So that might be one where it makes sense that the Bills want to see, like, if it's not a clean break, if that were the case, maybe he would definitely have gone to IR. But this is maybe more in between, which would help to explain the Bills' strategy on it.
Is there anything else injury-wise? I mean, we know Bernard and Johnson, like we're talking about, are already ruled out. Is there anything pop up today that we didn't expect? Or is it's pretty much full speed ahead?
Kyrie Elam has a neck injury, limited today in a walkthrough. So tomorrow will be a little bit bigger of a day to figure that out. So if that's another secondary player down, then you could be looking at, you know, what to do there. Interesting, by the way, speaking of that, Brandon Codrington got a little bit of time, you know, in the secondary, and he made a couple plays on the ball. He's also called for a pass interference, but just on that kid, I think he's got juice, man. I think that the Jets have Gibson, who's really good, but they could regret trading this kid to the Bills, man. I love what I see from him, but he got in, so maybe that's someone that, you know, if you're confident he can be a backup player if you are going to be without Elam, but we got a few days. The more interesting thing might be from the Ravens side, guys. They're already in a transition on the O-line.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life. But that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
There's been a lot of question about their O-line this year, and they're down three offensive line starters today at practice. Now, all three of them played the entire game on Sunday against the Cowboys, so my guess is they'll be playing, they'll be back on the field, but that means they're dealing with things. Here it is a Wednesday, and none of them are practicing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see where it goes with them throughout the week. It doesn't sound, you know, again, it doesn't sound like when you hear it that way and you see it that way that they necessarily miss the game. But I guess something to monitor. Josh Allen's still limited with the left hand, so I'm guessing that might mean more another week of the glove and the fingers taped.
Of course, I don't have to tell you this, but
full with the left hand. I'm sorry, guys. I shouldn't say limited. He was full, but he was listed with the left hand injury. Sorry about that.
All right. I know I don't have to explain any of this to you, but two sides to every trade. Don't forget, Sal, for Codrington, the Jets were able to swap 2026 sevenths with the Bills.
Oh, yeah.
So it seems free, but that bill always comes to you, Sal. The bill always comes.
He don't even know it's going to be drafting first.
Okay, the bill does not always come because Rob Ray was traded for a player to be named later, and then they had a switch in regimes. There was never a player to be named later.
No, that's right. Any future considerations probably means Zippo.
Right.
Yeah. But maybe the Jets sort of put a condition in there. Like, you know what? If we end up drafting before you, just flip it back. Like, it's just, you know, we could end up lose-lose there on that one, but not high stakes.
Hey, just to wrap up where we started here, I was right. That Bills playoff game in 95, Tyndale, Holmes, and Thomas all scored rushing touchdowns in that game. So, again, this game on Monday night didn't have three rushing touchdowns by three different running backs, but three of them did score.
I haven't figured out how to search this.
Okay.
Like, I searched. I don't know how to do it on StatHead. Like, how would I do that on StatHead?
Me neither, Mike. I was thinking about it as we were talking through it, and I'm like, I don't know if you can put that query in, to be quite honest with you.
No. Well, I know that I've learned since we started this conversation there have been 74 Bills games ever, including playoffs, where they have rushed for at least three touchdowns. But I'm not sure yet how to, like, eliminate Josh Allen from this,
right.
Include receiving touchdowns by running backs. Got a lot of work to do left here. All right. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, guys.
That's our Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
803-0550 to talk Bills with us. We'll do so after the update. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
Now, I know there's a lot of people talking out there. Again, I'm not trying to tear down anybody. I've loved everybody that I've played with. And you don't have to tear other people down to build each other up. And, you know, we're building each other up right now, and that's all we're trying to do. We're trying to stay together as a team, and we're really caring about each other. And, you know, everybody in this building's got that feeling. Again, I love 14. I still do. Everyone wants to keep making this thing a thing. And, you know, we're so focused on what's going on inside of our building, and that's the only thing that we're caring about right now.
Look, Josh, you said it, right? This is not one of those times where you need to be like, oh, they're trying to break us apart. He was the one who said it. If he doesn't say, it's nice, do I need the direct quote? I feel like maybe this is going to be one where I want to have the exact quote. It's something at least very close to, it's nice to have guys that don't care about stats.
Right.
Like, really, how do you think it works? He's not naive, but... You know, he's
right.
He's so perfect in so many ways. Like, what? This isn't my fault. I didn't start this. You guys are trying. That's not exactly what he said here. But, you know, he's the one who implied. What else was he thinking when he said guys who don't care about stats? Like, Diggs is gone. And that's what everybody has assumed this whole time. So, not our fault.
I liked how Diggs put it last week or the week before. He was asked. I don't remember the context exactly. It's just one of these, you know, scrum deals. And I think the impression I got from the quotes I saw was that someone was trying to get him to say something bad about the Bills and or Allen specifically. And Diggs's response was, "I don't need to talk bad about my old girlfriend to make my new girlfriend feel good." It's the same thing Allen's telling you there, too. Like, you know, I sympathize with Allen. Like, he's trying to make this work. He's got a room full of really unproven, mostly, guys here. And so wants to pump them up and compliment them for not being in his ear about, you know, catches and stats and whatever. And... You know, he doesn't have to be thinking about Diggs at all when he says it, but of course he has to know that when he says it that way, it's going to be inferred that this is better than the way it can be or the way it was. It's exactly what we're going to do. You're talking about what it was like before, and now it's better. So there's no other way to really take that other than some commentary on liking it like this better than the way it was. Doesn't have to necessarily be about Diggs. Who knows? For all we know, Davis was a huge baby about targets or something. I mean, behind closed doors. I have no idea.
No chance.
But anyway, it's, you know, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. We're only 3 weeks in. They haven't even played yet. That comes in a couple of weeks. So... You know, we're going to be, whether he likes it or not, we're going to be monitoring it, and we're going to be paying attention to everything everyone involved says, because that's just what we do.
Will Allen say this week that he doesn't know who they play next week? Will he do that? Pull that one this time? Maybe he doesn't. I do. You know, this is kind of like why it's complicated, even from the outside. I have different things I want from Stephon Diggs as a tool in... these conversations, and maybe they're in conflict. Like, I think it's definitely interesting. It's controversial. It's the last thing we'd want to not talk about, like, on purpose,
mm-hmm.
because it's definitely of interest to most fans. Of course, I mean, I think you and I have enough experience to know how this works. I even saw it on the call screen for the previous show today. There are fans who think, you know, enough already. He's gone. And why do we need, like, there are fans who would say, even without hearing Allen say it first, once you hear Allen say it first, people are going to line up and repeat it. But even without hearing him say it first, there are going to be people who are like, you know, why are you guys trying to break this apart? Why are you trying to, you know, start something, whatever? So I am not, like, I think it's interesting, though, mm-hmm. and it's almost weird to forget about it, you know, and pretend like, well, we shouldn't, you know, we don't want to break anything apart. So I think it's, you know, a lot. It's a great topic, even with his having left, you know, like you can at the same time discuss this team, which is off to a perfect start. There's no take here that it isn't going well, and acknowledge his value to the last, you know, 4 years or what?
Four years
and, you know, his excellence in that and debate it. So I both want to have Diggs to talk about and not want to obsess about it or sound like I'm obsessed with it. But I certainly also don't want to
just blow it off entirely. Yeah, right. Right. I mean, that's why I just said they haven't even played yet. I mean, get ready for, like, if we, the collective we, right? The fans and media in this case are just all one thing, I'm gonna say. If we're already sort of paying attention to it and picking it apart, the run up to them actually playing is just get ready. If Diggs is being asked about Allen and the Bills 2 weeks ago, he's definitely going to be asked about him again after next Sunday night and in the lead up to them playing in Houston a week from Sunday. And so will the Bills. So McDermott and Allen, like everyone, the whole bunch. So, you know, they're going to have to all be buttoned up. And, you know, I can't pretend to know what's on Allen's mind exactly when he says that. And whether he'd like to have phrased it differently so that it didn't seem like it was at best, just a comparison between this way is better than the other way, and if it's about Diggs or not. But he just has to know. Like, he's going to say something like that. The reflection, whether it's justified or not, that's going to be back in the mirror we're all looking at is he's talking about Diggs.
Which is almost impossible to deny.
Right.
Unless it's D'Onta Hardy. This week, the Bills play Baltimore, right, and they have D'Onta Hardy. So maybe it's about Baltimore.
Yeah, maybe Hardy will go on a campaign about how ignored he was in this offense and how he deserved more.
Maybe.
That'd be fun. Stupid, but it would be fun.
What do you remember? What was your experience like playing in Buffalo? Well, all I remember is how badly they wanted to get me out of there.
Right.
I could say something like that.
I remember running down the field open and being ignored.
And I just I just never got what I wanted. So I came here.
Well, thanks for the punt return anyway.
I haven't thought about like every team, but just to throw it out there, it seems that Bills versus Diggs might be the best revenge narrative in the NFL this year. You got these quarterbacks like Darnold who've been on different teams. Dalton plays the Bengals this week, but it's just like his fifth team.
Yeah, it's so far removed now.
Bills and Diggs with Houston, we knew this was going to happen. With Houston being the contender they appear to be, it's like it's got it all. It's personal. It's a referendum on team building. You know, it's high stakes in the conference. What's better? If it's a playoff game, that's better.
Sure.
But for a regular season game, I was really stunned this was not a primetime game because of how perfect it is. But it isn't. Every other game on the Bills schedule is a primetime game, just not that one.
I think as juicy as, certainly for the early part of the season, I can't think of another game from a revenge standpoint, the way that we talk about it. But Atlanta does play at Minnesota in December.
Okay, good.
So Cousins, you know, that I think a scorned franchise quarterback coming back trumps, you know, a scorned receiver, you know, going to visit him.
That's really good. Did you just think of Cousins first and look up their schedule?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
I thought, does Atlanta, but over here I'm thinking to myself, does Atlanta play Minnesota? Well, I can find that out quickly, and I did. So, yeah, week 14 they play in
Minnesota. With the Bears, there's all kinds of ifs, different scenarios with the draft that could have meant, you know, different matchups. He might not get Bryce Young, with Bryce Young having been benched already, but he's already played Stroud. He already played Richardson. Like, every game on the Bears schedule seems to be some kind of interesting matchup with a team he could have ended up playing for, or just how things could have fallen differently. Other high draft picks from recent years. Chicago has the Rams this week. Well, and there's coaching things like this too, but I can't think of any right now where a coach is coaching against his former team.
Seattle have Baltimore this year. I could find that out quickly too.
They shouldn't.
A couple of clicks.
No, they shouldn't.
Okay.
They play the NFC East, and then one of their first place team from last year, the Niners maybe, or the Bucks. I don't know. Bucks maybe. Well, it's next week anyway. Not this week.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
You know, we can run through the gauntlet next week with fans who are like into it, and then fans responding to those fans with like, why are we still talking about this?
Right.
I love why are we still talking about this. Sometimes, we're not above reproach here. Like there will be times probably when I would say for myself that I just want to kind of pick at something because I do think, maybe I can fire something up. But, I mean, the whole NFL will be talking about that game next week.
Yes. And if you were sick of it when he was still on the team, you're definitely still sick of it now, and just continue to be prepared to be sicker would be my advice, because it's not going to stop. It ain't going to be just us next week, that's for sure.
803-0550, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog with you 3 to 7 here on WGR. Four teams this season in 3 weeks in the NFL have been 7.5-point underdogs or greater. 4-0, straight up. Every one of those teams has won that game. 7.5 points or more. They've won every one of those. No wonder nobody's left in Survivor. Those are the teams you pick.
Right.
But if you've been favored by 7.5 or more in a game so far this year, you lost. Which is wild. It's four games, but part of that is there aren't more of those through 3 weeks, because usually I think there would be more than four.
More than four teams favored by that much, right?
Yeah. Over 3 weeks?
Yeah.
It's more than one. Usually that's going to be two or three games a week at least, where it's, big spreads, but this year it has not been that way. This week, the Niners are favored by 10.5 against New England, which would make that the first time, according to Evan Abrams, who's the best at this kind of data, the first time New England's been a double-digit underdog since 2001. And it's a famous game. I was in Vegas for it. It's Brady versus Manning, when Brady just takes over the starting job from Bledsoe.
Yeah.
And they're a huge underdog at home, and they blow out the Colts. That's the last time they were a 10-point underdog against anybody.
Wow.
I know, right? 23 years.
That is incredible.
And there's no other line higher than 7.5. Kansas City, I think anyway, as of now, Kansas City is a 7.5-point favorite at the Chargers. You know what the total is? Guess the total. You're great at guessing the lines. Are you great at guessing the totals?
Who are we talking about again here? I'm sorry.
Chiefs at something else. Chargers.
Chiefs at Chargers.
The Bills-Ravens total, for comparison's sake, is 46.5.
I'm going to say the Chargers-Chiefs is 42.
39. Can you believe that's how bad it is? There's a Chiefs game with the total under 40. That's probably happened in some of these games against the Broncos or the Raiders, maybe, where they were a huge favorite. 7.5 and 39.5, actually, it is at MGM with the Chargers.
Jets are 7.5-point favorites at home against Denver this week.
That's right.
That's another big spread this week. There's a 6.5 here. I just saw Houston with Jacksonville coming in.
I'm totally on Jacksonville this week.
6.5.
Double down. You're probably wondering why I'm wearing pants today, Bulldog.
I didn't even notice that you're wearing pants, honestly. I don't mean to be inattentive.
That's nice to hear.
But I didn't notice what I was wearing. I didn't check you out today. No.
I'm going to tell you, thanks for asking. I'm going to tell you why. Because it's warm enough where I would almost always wear shorts on a day like this.
Yeah.
So my dog, last night, got home, had the deep end. I've got a almost one-year-old pug. She's 15 pounds, a little rabbit running around the house. I think the world's fastest dog, but we don't have the pug race like they have corgi races. So I had the podcast with Adam Krautwurst at 8:30, went till 9:30, come up from the basement about 20 to 10. And I like to always have my my shoes on in the basement. So it's sandals. I wore shorts to work with shorts, sandals. So I sit down on the couch at like 9:40. Margot is up. I take off my sandals, Velcro, right? And put them down. And she starts digging in, licking my shoes.
So you've been like, wearing all day.
As comprehensively as one could lick someone's shoe. Just went on for like half an hour.
It's like a regular Rex Ryan with your shoes over here. All right.
I can't even imagine he would be that bad, you know? So anyway, she's just half an hour with these shoes. The Velcro, the straps, the soles,
thank
the
you so
sides.
Much for the sound effect.
And I mean, I just, my wife just, and I just kept looking at each other like, is this going to stop? Will she get to a point where she's had enough licking of these shoes?
Yeah.
And I don't think it ever really stopped.
You have to intervene. Yeah.
It started raining. After about half an hour, I heard the rain outside. I grabbed my sandals and threw them outside. Like, you're done, and I'm going to get these,
cleaned up, washed,
right. Naturally washed
right
now. But then I did later ask Margot to go to a movie with me because I thought that was such an affectionate.
Yeah.
My wife's like, what? You've never licked my shoes at all. I've never seen you do it. So anyway, that was last night.
Boy, this took a turn.
That was last night.
Yeah. Fred.
That kind of devotion.
Fred will do that. I have tried a few times, not with shoes. He will lick me. Like every morning, a part of our routine, basically, like I'm usually up first. And he's been wherever my wife is. If that was our bed, great. If she was up in the attic doing something or even fell asleep up there, he's up there. But he hears me stirring and he comes down. So I let him out. I get my coffee. I go sit down on the couch and he jumps up on me like you would hold a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's got his front paws are like under my chin and he's sort of sitting propped up on my lap and he'll just start licking under my beard. And I stop him immediately now. But There have been times where I thought, I want to just see how long he'll go if I let him.
Oh, no.
And he'll just go. He'll just go and go and go. And I just, all right, this is gross. I have to stop. Like,
you have to be the one to stop it.
I have to stop it. He cannot control himself. I don't know if it's the whiskers. He doesn't do this to anyone else. It's me. I think it's the beard. And he likes how it, I don't know. But I got it. I got to like 2 minutes once. I'm like, okay, I'm done. I gotta have my day here. I can't just have you licking my face.
It's an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
Waiting to happen. How long can you handle having a dog lick your face?
What I like, though, is that even though I will stop him from doing that, he'll still sit there and stare at me and just make growly noises at me for a while. I pretend we're talking. Mm-hmm. Like, how was your night? Oh, really? I'm sorry Mom was snoring. You were probably snoring, too. And just, we'll go on like that. And that also will go on as long as I allow it to.
I do that.
Until I finally say, all right, I gotta start working, which means, like, check Twitter.
Yes.
Usually.
There are people, I think, that like having dogs lick them. Lick their faces.
Yeah.
I can't get there.
I'm not a huge fan.
I see what she eats.
Right.
I just do not.
And what else she licks.
I do not want that.
No.
They say, like, a dog's mouth is cleaner than a human mouth.
I find that hard to believe if you're potentially eating rabbit poop in the backyard.
Or your own.
Yeah.
How could that be possible?
Let's just leave it right there.
803-0550. Back to the Bills after sports. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog WGR.